Hi, I'm Heather Mulder.
And I'm Janice Greeno, and you're listening to Dementia Untangled, where we explore the topic of dementia through conversations with physicians, experts, and community leaders.
Our discussions focus on innovative ideas, practical strategies, and proven methods to guide caregivers along a supportive path.
Hello, and welcome to Dementia Untangled. Thank you for joining us for this episode of our podcast.
Today, our conversation will be with Edie Yao, who is the Director of Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion Engagement for the Alzheimer's Association. And we're going to be discussing the Asian American and Pacific Islander point of view and dementia. On Dementia Untangled, we are honored to shine a light on experts and organizations who are building bridges and reducing barriers when it comes to dementia care. The Alzheimer's Association is well known for its work in this area. In fact, their annual publication, Alzheimer's Facts and Figures, in 2021 had a focus on racial and ethnic differences in the prevalence of Alzheimer's disease and other dementias. So I'm really looking forward to learning more from this conversation.
I am as well, Heather. And the Asian American and Pacific Islander population is actually the fastest growing subgroup in America and includes an expansive number of diverse and beautiful cultures. And within what is often called AAPI, there are many similarities and there are many differences as well, which makes it a little difficult to speak in generalities with so many languages and traditions being represented in AAPI. I'm just excited to know that there are culturally relevant programs that have been successful in providing them with support. And I'm really looking forward to our conversation with Edie today.
Welcome, Edie. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Heather. I'm really excited to join all of you. This is fantastic.
Before we learn more about the Asian American and Pacific Islander perspective, I want to learn a little bit more about you. Can you tell us about your journey and what led you to connect to the dementia community?
Sure. Well, let's see. I think where I always feel grounded is that my roots started with my grandmother and just my love for my maternal grandmother. She didn't raise me, but she was around a lot. So she would spend weeks at a time with us. I just had such a strong connection with her. And over time in my youth and in my college years and trying to figure out what is it that I love to do, you know, I realized I really love older adults. In fact, recently I was with some old friends and they were reminding me that at one point when I visited them in New York, he said, "You used to take pictures of older adults on the street." And I didn't even realize I did that, but it was simply because I was so excited to see, look at all these active older adults. And so I went on to study gerontology. I got my master's in gerontology after doing my undergrad in art, which was so fun and great. And then in gerontology, you know, through my work doing case management work for a Japanese American senior service agency, I knew a friend who worked at the Alzheimer's Association, and I thought it was a really interesting opportunity. So more in particular, to work with underserved communities, myself being a daughter of Chinese immigrants, you know, I've always had a fondness for communities that are underrepresented and underserved, not realizing at the time that that's a lot around health equity. But this was a position that came up really looking at how do we engage underserved communities in Alzheimer's Association work. And so that's really where I started and have been with the association for now over 20 years. And really became committed to not only the mission of the association, but committed to our diversity, equity, and inclusion work. So starts with my grandmother. And, you know, I think over time, many of us start to, if you've been in this field long enough, you do meet more and more people who have dementia or have Alzheimer's. If it's not in your family, the people around you are impacted. And it becomes quite personal.
Edie, can you tell us a little bit more about your role and the work that you do with the Asian American and Pacific Islander population? You know, the Alzheimer's Association serves locally, but also on a national level.
Yeah, so Asian Americans, as Janice had mentioned earlier, AAPIs are the fastest growing racial or ethnic group in the United States. And while we may not have quite as robust statistics around the impact, we do know that AAPIs are in fact impacted by Alzheimer's. And yet what we see is that there's not quite as many people reaching out for help. And so why is that? And so it's thinking about how do we raise awareness within AAPI communities? How do we help families know that there's support out there? And then to think about what are, in fact, the barriers to reaching out for help? And how do we bridge that gap? How do we reduce the barriers and make it easier for AAPI communities to seek help? So it starts a lot with partnerships and thinking about organizations, community groups, churches, faith-based organizations that are credible and doing good work and trusted in Asian communities, and working together on what does culturally relevant dementia support look like. So, for example, partnering with a local community center or a senior center that serves largely Chinese or Japanese American population, and bringing education to that group. And then maybe starting support groups that might be language specific in Chinese or in Japanese. And even in English, to think about it comes from that cultural lens. Right. When you think about Alzheimer's, I think of it as so much a matter of the heart. You know, you're talking about people you love, and you're talking about people who are losing their memory. And the most effective way to provide care for them is to know who they are. Person-centered care is a term we often use. And to know that person, you have to know their cultural context. You know, where did they grow up? What kind of food do they eat? What kind of trauma may they have, maybe they've experienced? And many Asian Americans have experienced trauma immigrating to the United States, or are veterans from World War II, Filipinos in particular, and what that experience was like and how that might carry over. Especially if they're dealing with Alzheimer's and dementia. So partnerships are a big thing. And then also making sure that services are culturally relevant and accessible in language.
I can really appreciate how important it must be to get to know the person and the family and the particular tradition that you might be working with, and to support them in different ways. And I love how you mentioned that you are partnering with trusted organizations. You said that dementia is really impacting the AAPI community. Are there ways that it is specifically just come to mind? They're like, wow, we are being impacted in this way.
You know, I think there's a lot of activity right now that is, we've got some exciting work happening among the research community to engage AAPIs in research, because in clinical research, you know, overall, I think there's less than 5% of individuals who participate in clinical trials related to dementia are of minority groups. So that includes Black Americans, Latinos, Asian Americans, Native Americans. But when it comes to clinical research that is focused on AAPI specifically, there's a statistic out there that less than 1% of NIH funded studies is devoted to AAPI research, less than 1%. And then less than 3% total participants in studies at the Alzheimer's Disease Research Centers are AAPI. So while research may suggest that Asian Americans are less likely than other racial groups to develop Alzheimer's or other dementia, you know, I think the question is, how much do we actually know about Asian Americans and dementia? Because maybe we don't even have enough of a representation to know the greater impact this has on the community. And so we've got some exciting work among various researchers that are looking to recruit more Asian Americans to participate in registries to say, hey, yes, I am willing to sign up and I will consider participating in research related to aging or Alzheimer's and dementia if it comes up and I feel comfortable doing that. So there's the UCSF Care Registry. There's also this Alzheimer's Asian cohort for Alzheimer's disease. And so really a number of different things happening. I know there's another researcher looking at Vietnamese individuals and thinking about specifically wartime trauma and how that may impact the prevalence of Alzheimer's among Vietnamese people. So we're starting to see more happening in this area, and it's so important that that we all consider being a part of the solution, right? Because unless we're represented in these studies, how will we know if any treatment or cure or prevention works for all of us if we're not represented in these studies?
All really important points and important conversations that I know a lot of institutions are having now is, how do we make sure that populations are represented in research? I know there's a lot of different ways that people view dementia. You know, there's a big push to help people understand that dementia is not a normal part of aging. I'm wondering, are there specific cultural differences that you see with the AAPI community? And are there even differences between Eastern and Western medicine that may play a role?
Yeah, I remember years ago we had in Northern California, we were in this project to develop an Asian dementia care network, and we did focus groups on even just the terminology and understanding of Alzheimer's. And for so many, we learned that just the what you call it made such a difference. People didn't want to call it Alzheimer's. They didn't want to call it dementia. They wanted to just talk about it as forgetfulness or memory loss. So that would be our door opener. And then learning about the terminology for Alzheimer's and dementia in language. And so, for example, in Chinese, the term used to describe Alzheimer's was old person's crazy catatonic disease. And who would want to be labeled as having that disease?
Right.
So that in itself became such a barrier. And at the Alzheimer's Association, years ago, I think it's been over 10 years at least, where we decided we're going to translate it phonetically and just use the phonetic translation of Alzheimer's and be able to take that as an opportunity to educate folks that this is simply named after Dr. Alzheimer's, nothing else to it, right? And so I think we still see a lot of stigma and shame attached with Alzheimer's. I know, having worked with Indian, South Asian populations, community members, they have said there's such stigma that people feel like they can't talk about it amongst their family and friends. So there's still a lot of work to be done to help inform communities that, you know, what is it, that it's not a mental health or a disease, it's an organic brain disease. And what are things that we can do about it as well, right? And why early detection is important.
I can see how language could either be a barrier, but once you get through it, it really could be something that could help you explain what dementia is. And I wonder about Heather's question about Eastern and Western medicine. Yes. How does that play a role?
Yeah, thank you. I was just remembering, there was another question in there. I want to give credit to Dr. Ladson Hinton. I remember listening to him talk about this. And really, his point was, in much of his work, understanding people's starting point in understanding Alzheimer's. And so even for all of us as providers or family members, friends, to know what's a person's understanding of this condition. And so if you think about, if someone thinks of Alzheimer's as it is having to do with some spiritual, I don't know what the word is right now, it's not coming to mind, but, you know, perhaps they go to their temple for a remedy as opposed to their Western physician, right? Because mm-hmm. they believe it's something that can be corrected from a spiritual practitioner. That's a really important starting place. You can't talk about the types of treatments that we may use to deal with the symptoms of Alzheimer's if that's their starting place. The other thing that's important to recognize is also, if they truly believe in, say, Eastern medicine, such as traditional Chinese medicine, they may look to herbal remedies, right? Mm-hmm. And so you can only find these things out by having a conversation with that person. Not everyone believes in Eastern medicine, but there may be a little of both, right? So there's that continuum. Some people may use both Eastern and Western medicine. Some people may only believe in Eastern medicine. I know my own mother would say, and I've heard this from many people, they say, oh, well, the Western medicine, you know, I'll take half because one pill is too strong. No matter what it is, they take half, thinking that it's too strong. And then taking into account, you feel like, well, I'm a smaller person, perhaps, and so it's too much. Do they tell their doctors this? I'm not sure they do. And so we always recommend, when you go see a physician, and particularly if you're taking a loved one who has dementia, you know, you bring all of their medications to the doctor so they can see what that person's taking, and include any over-the-counter medications, any herbal supplements, and any perhaps Eastern medicine or herbal remedies, because you never know if that may contribute to some of the symptoms that they're seeing, or have some kind of a counter reaction of some sort, right? Or adverse reaction to some new medication that they're taking with their herbal remedy.
That's a really important point that you bring up, that caregivers need to be forthcoming with all of the treatments that are that their person is participating in. Do you have any other specific strategies for caregivers or family members who care for someone with dementia and are part of the AAPI population?
When we're talking about Alzheimer's and dementia, thinking about who's providing that care and, you know, what's important to that person, those are important things to think about. And at some point, you know, we all know that we often recommend caregivers need to get some support, right? So whether it's enlisting additional family members or friends or looking for services to support them, really put out there what's important to that person, what's important to the family. Again, going back to the love of this individual, you know, what are some activities that they enjoy doing before? And even thinking about what are the names or how to address the person, I think is important as well. I remember I had a conversation with some volunteers for our advisory council. I think we had a Chinese advisory council at one point, and they said, you know, for say an adult day center or something, people, the staff would address everyone by their first name. Hi, Mary, how are you doing? Hi, Tom, how's your day? And for many Chinese families, you would never call someone by their first name unless you were their close friend or something. And so it's often more appropriate, hi, Mr. Lee, how's your day? Or hi, Mrs. Wong, how's your day coming along? And so I think those things make a difference, and especially for the family members to feel like their loved one is respected, and, you know, just making sure they have some of the cultural nuances in place, thinking about the foods or activities. Likewise, hiring someone into the home or even enlisting friends, like, to really understand what some of those cultural important things are for that person, right? Whether it's celebrating specific holidays or activities or how to address them. Those are all really critical.
Thank you so much for sharing about that, especially when it comes to those respectful, traditional ways of just recognizing someone, and that it shows respect to the person and to their family. And I'm wondering if you have any other tips for balancing those traditional cultural values with maybe mainstream American culture.
Yeah, you know, I think one of the big things that I hope to get across, both mainstream providers and also for community members, there's this notion that Asian Americans care for their own. And while, yes, that is true, and I think AARP had come out with a report on AAPI caregivers, and there's a slightly higher percentage of AAPI families that live in multi-generational households that tend to care for their own longer than other populations. Some of that has to do with the fact that there aren't enough culturally competent services, dementia services available for them to feel like they even have options. So sometimes it's because there are no options. Think about, okay, I need to look for, you're asking me to look for some kind of a community day center, right? An adult day center. Well, do they have anyone that speaks the language that my mother speaks? Or Do they have, again, any of, culturally relevant activities? Those are really critical. The other thing, though, is for families to realize it's not an either or. Just because you do hire some help in the home or, due to safety or health reasons, you do need to consider a different community setting for where that person lives, long-term care setting, assisted living, that it doesn't mean you're a bad daughter. It doesn't mean that you're not fulfilling your responsibility to care for your mother or your parent. I think that's a really important message to send out, because there is this sense among Asian families that it is my responsibility, that filial piety and all of that, that I have to be the one to take this on. But we know that for Alzheimer's, the average number of years you could be caring for someone is 8 years. That's a really long time. And our families are not set up the way they used to be a generation or two ago. People work, they have young kids to take care of. They may live very far away from their loved ones. And so it may not be practical for them to take on the caregiving responsibility that we once held so dear through cultural traditions. So thinking about, can we use both, family support and professional support, and for providers to think about, how do we provide services that have cultural accessibility, right, to Asian Americans and other communities?
I'd love this message that you're sharing. It's so important. And, it brings me back to what we started with. You have some programs that are just culturally relevant programs, and I'm wondering if you might just want to highlight one for us today.
Sure. I want to highlight our helpline. It's so important that people know in times of need, if they feel like they have no one to talk to, or they need someone who really understands dementia, that they can call our helpline. And that's a 24/7 number that they can call at 800-272-3900. And you will get a professional answering live 24 hours, 7 days a week. And we do have that service available in 200 languages. And so that's really important to know, as well as our website is available in multiple languages. And you can start with alz.org.
Edie, thank you so much for sharing your insight and knowledge with us today. I wonder, before we close, could you give us your final thought when it comes to the Asian American Pacific Islander population and dementia?
I think my final thought is Asian Americans and Pacific Islanders are such a rich, diverse population. And as we're all aging in place, we too will encounter Alzheimer's and dementia in our communities, and just know that there is help out there. So many organizations are wanting to provide help, and we need to reach out, and we need to be visible and participate in finding a cure and finding effective ways to end Alzheimer's together.
Today, our conversation has been with Edie Yao, Director of Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion Engagement for the Alzheimer's Association. Edie, we appreciate you helping us untangle the AAPI perspective and dementia.
Yes, thank you. We appreciate you so much, Edie. Thank you for joining us today.
Thanks so much. It's such a pleasure to meet all of you and to chat with you.
Thank you also, Heather, for another great conversation. And thanks to you, our wonderful listeners. Thank you for joining us. And if you haven't already, please subscribe and share this podcast. I'm looking forward to our next conversation on Dementia Untangled. Thank you for joining us for this episode of Dementia Untangled. Be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Dementia Untangled is hosted by Heather Mulder and Janice Greeno, produced and edited by Amber Ayers, and is brought to you by Banner Alzheimer's Institute and Banner Sun Health Research Institute. We are supported by generous donations to the Banner Alzheimer's Foundation.
Please visit our website at banneralz.org and follow us on Facebook to learn about upcoming events. If you have questions or comments, please email us at dementiauntangled@bannerhealth.com.